This is the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast with Natalie Ross. And today's guest is Nikki Silvestri of Soil and Shadow. And she is a shadow worker, but she does this in places where that terminology isn't used. She does this in places like city councils and in groups of, you know, more mainstream, quote, normal places where people really need the support of, you know, dealing with their shadows. And so I love talking with her today about her perspective on shadow and how she brings this healing support and processes to the people in so many different ways. And you'll find I'm a huge fan of her. You'll hear it in the show because I'm just like, oh my gosh, we need more people like you, Nikki, doing this amazing work in all of these kind of covert places, I think. So other than that, you may have noticed that the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast was down for a week. Well, we got hacked and infected with malware. It wasn't like a intentional hack against me or Dream Freedom Beauty. I think it was just someone had set their little hacker bot to look for any weaknesses on any websites anywhere. And I think it got in through an old out-of-date plugin. So thank you to my amazing dad, Rick Ross, not the rapper, but Rick Ross, who ninja skilled these the retrieval of all of these files so that we could migrate everything and reinstate it on a new host. So I just want to ask you all to just take a second and just send your gratitude and love and well wishes to my dad, Rick Ross, to my stepmom, Elizabeth Ross, for all of the work and dedication they put into helping bring this show back to life after the whole entire server was brought down by this virus and malware. So just send them some love, send them some gratitude wherever you are and wherever they are. And I just want to say I'm so grateful for all of you and all of you who reached out to let me know that the site was down, even though I knew. I was just so grateful that people were willing to let me know that something wasn't working, because it really does help to know these things. You know, I don't always know instantly if something's not working, so always feel free to let me know. And yeah, well, we're back online and we're bringing it back to you. So I hope you enjoy this episode. And again, if you find something useful in this episode or any episode, the very best thing you can do to support us is share with a friend. Share it with a friend. Every time you listen to an episode and it really resonates for you and helps shift something or inspire you, I would just be so grateful if you could share it with a friend. And now to our show. Welcome to the show, Nikki. I am so excited to hear whatever we're going to get into today. So excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
Awesome. So before we dive in deep into that shadow and soil, which we are going to thoroughly play in today, do you want to give us an invocation?
I would love to.
All right.
To those of you listening, go ahead and find a comfortable seat and straighten your spine, sitting about 75% relaxed, 25% active. Just enough to feel the line of your spine. And bring your attention to your pelvic floor. Feel the tips of your butt bones in the chair, and feel that point just below the base of your spine. Concentrate your awareness there and feel into this as the seed of potential in your life. It's that pre-place where anything that you want to create, anything that we want to create, is possible. And by focusing our attention there and using our bodies as a metaphor for that pre-creation, we can bring it forth. Imagine what that thing is for you today. What have you been hesitating to start a process of creating that you know needs to be created in your life right now? How can you use this moment and start a process through your body of bringing that thing into being? Take in a deep breath. Release. Thank you.
That was beautiful. I was just bringing myself back. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I found you, Nikki. We met each other via Instagram because I had multiple listeners reach out to me. I asked a question on the Instagram and I said something about, you know, who should I talk to about manifesting and shadow work, and I don't even remember the question I asked, because what just stands out in my mind right now is the shadow. And I think in like marginalization and stuff like that. I think that was the essence of the question. And when I came across your work, I was just like, oh my goddess, this woman is doing, she's like doing it. And so listeners, Nikki does soil and shadow. And I've read through your whole website. I've like followed you on Instagram. I've done all this. I've just like fallen in love with what you do. And for our listeners who haven't come across you yet, can you just share, you know, tell us what you do with soil and shadow, because it's so rich and so deep and probably so different from a lot of people have even heard. I would love to just start there.
Totally. It's actually a very good practice for me, because soil and shadow start as a bit of a prayer. My background is in climate change and food systems. And so I've worked in ecology for the majority of my adult life. And I've also been the person who can come into interpersonal situations and de-escalate my entire life. My mom's a psychologist. Both my parents have master's degrees in counseling. And so how people relate to each other has always been something that's been top of mind for me. And after having a career doing economic development work, it really hit me that the biggest reason why good ideas didn't flourish was because people didn't know how to play well together in groups. Just period.
God, it's so true.
Yeah. You know, there's all these ideas out there about how to save and change the world tend to be really good ideas. People just get to the point where, you know, our stuff gets activated when we really put our heart soul into something. And when our stuff gets activated in relationship to other people, we tend to hide. And so a lot of my work became, how do I encourage people while they are in the world being the badasses that they are? How do I encourage them to not hide? And how do I help them integrate the stuff that comes up that they didn't anticipate? And so Soil and Shadow was born because I work with change makers, and I work with, you know, everywhere from self to system is kind of how I talk about it. So all the way on the spectrum of self, I do coaching work, and I work with folks in the world who have responsibility around how to do shadow work and integrate within themselves so that their change-making work can be reflective of abundance instead of scarcity. And then on the system side, I work with different organizations and businesses and initiatives on how to have healthy relationships as they're doing the initiatives between all of the stakeholders. And what are the interpersonal tools and the conflict resolution tools to help them emerge? And the phrase soil and shadow kind of came up because soil is a love of my heart. I mean, on the ecosystem side, I tend to work on things that help build healthy soil, but it's also just such a good metaphor for fertility and richness and the best stuff being the dark stuff. Yeah. Light soil tends to be unhealthy, dry, sandy soil. Dark, rich, moist, fecund soil is the kind of stuff that we want to have. Mm-hmm. So I'll pause there.
Love it. So it sounds like you're doing, I mean, you must be able to hold space for some tough stuff, because I've witnessed the conflict that can happen when different groups or different people are trying to work together in a group, and how much that, you know, as someone who's aware of the shadow myself, I can easily see like, oh, wow, they're really coming from their place of wounding when they're trying to get this community work done. And they're actually, their own wounds are actually getting in the way of them trying to do the good work they're trying to do in the community. Is that essentially what you see when you have people come to, when you're doing this facilitation work?
100%. And I mean, half of it isn't even official facilitation work. You know, some of it is just me being in, like, if I'm at a city council meeting or something, and I see that the arguing back and forth between the city council person and the community members is, you know, one person saying, I'm scared about this thing happening because I'm scared my life is going to change if it happens. Mm-hmm. And the other group of people saying, I'm scared of this thing not happening because I don't know what my life's going to be if it doesn't. You know, just, I think my work is about boiling down, what are people actually saying to yeah. them, to each other and to themselves? And can I just speak to that so that we can sort through the BS and the madness and actually meet people's needs? So some of it's above board in terms of people know I'm doing it.
Yeah. Like they bring you on specifically to facilitate, right?
Yes. But a lot of it just looks like regular soil work. And I'm just kind of the relationship fixer without being called that. Kind of like a chief of staff type person who goes in and tinkers to make sure that everybody's working well together.
I love this. I'm like, can we just like multiply you by a million and put one of you in every single organization and group ever?
You know what's funny about that? Is I feel like we used to, you know, yeah. like it yeah. took me 15 years worth of working in this field to be able to fully describe what it is that I actually do.
Wow.
Before, when we lived in times of council and when we lived in times of circle work, yeah. having someone whose job it was is to just hold the vibe and to make sure that it's a facilitative role, you know, but it doesn't always have to be the person that's sitting there holding the circle. There just needs to be someone attending to all of the stuff that comes up as people process and work through things together. Mm-hmm. We used to value that as a role, and I don't think that we do anymore.
I would say I feel that too. I don't have like direct evidence, but just from the work I've done in circles and the work I've done with elders, it seems like that is a way that has been lost in our modern times.
Yes. But some of us are bringing it back.
Yeah.
You're doing good work with your podcast mm-hmm. as well. So I feel it.
Thanks. So I'm curious to just get an example of like with your city council example where there might be two people who are like, I am afraid of this happening and I'm afraid of this not happening. And you're there and you're holding that space. Do you actually interact directly with them, or are you like just kind of like energetically helping the vibes? Like what does it look like when you're in that sort of covert role?
So in that example, it just would have been energetic if I didn't have a speaking role. Uh-huh. But usually I do have a speaking role and I'm participating. And so I will step in and I'll say, I'll speak to whatever dynamic I'm witnessing and then try to intervene in a way that doesn't feel too obtrusive. But usually that's what I'm being paid to do. So it doesn't feel obtrusive to the folk there. And a lot of times if I'm the one holding the container, I'll do the prep work ahead of time to make sure that everybody's clear on what their needs are before they walk into the room. And that just, I feel like streamlines things. But honestly, now the bulk of my work is working one-on-one or in groups with people that I've been working one-on-one with. Because I think people realize that it's leadership work, a lot of the stuff that I do. It's getting clear and right with self, because shadow work is such a personal journey. And that's become more of an interest of mine, is working with individuals, mostly women, around their own shadow work so that they can show up differently. And so I don't have to be the one intervening and acting in situations. I can support people who are in those situations to intervene themselves in ways that actually gets it done.
Yeah, right. Like you're teaching. It's the old, like, you can give a man a fish or teach a man a fish. And it
That's
sounds, yeah.
exactly right. That's exactly.
So I love this. And, you know, I would be willing to bet that most listeners on my show have at least some familiarity with shadow work. But I would love to hear, just because, why not? How would you describe the shadow and the shadow work and, like, what's happening there when we do shadow work?
Juicy, 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 juicy.
Right?
I would describe the shadow as just the parts of us that we can't see that are operating on how we interact in the world. Oh, could you
he
hear
agrees.
My son? In the
he agrees.
Yes, you agree? Is that what shadow work is? Is that what shadow work is? And when I say the things that are hidden, it's not just the things that we would consider, quote, dark or difficult. It's also the things that we are attracted to that we don't see as being a part of ourselves. And it can be just as dangerous to externalize pieces of ourself that we consider, quote, good, as it can be to externalize things we consider, quote, bad. So it's anything, the shadow is anything that we don't see as ourselves, put really simply.
Yeah, yeah. And what got you into this? You know, did you have your own awakening of sorts, or were you always into this stuff?
Such a good question. It was a dark and stormy night.
Just one night?
When it comes to explicit shadow work, I feel like I hit it really hard at the end of 2014 when I had something of a breakdown. I had been a nonprofit executive director for 5 years at that point, and it was a lot because I became an executive director for the first time when I was 25. So I was a young executive director. I went from running a local organization to a national organization.
Wow.
Where I would have the kind of weeks where, like, I think my second week at work at that national nonprofit, I got on a red eye to DC. I had to show up and be on television, like on national television that morning. At like 7 a.m. And then I went right to doing a TEDx talk. And then that afternoon had to ask for $500,000.
Amazing.
And that was like a normal day. You know, that was just a day in the life of being, of running a $3 million organization. And I did that for just under a year before I cracked hard. Like just hard. I found out that same year that my husband and I were going to have fertility troubles. We had been trying, I think, for 3 years at that point, and I got some testing back that showed that we were actually going to not be able to conceive naturally, and it was really hard on me. And I left that organization in a puddle, pretty much. Like, I had been burned out a bit coming out of my local work, and so it probably wasn't the best idea to take on a national nonprofit job. But I did.
Well, I mean, it has all the markers of success that in our sort of status quo world.
That's exactly what happened, right? I had a mentor of mine who told me that, you know, this is an incredible opportunity that I was never going to get again, kind of thing. And that I needed to take it. And that you kind of fade into irrelevancy if you don't take those opportunities when they're presented to you quite like that, with the kind of help that I had to do it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't hear my own mind when I was having that conversation, and I couldn't hear my body tell me that I just physically couldn't do it with what the capacity and the resources that I had at that point. So
looking back, can you tune into what you were saying to yourself in that moment, or do you just suspect that you were like, no, your body was like, no.
Is the question what I was actually feeling that I couldn't hear, or what I was telling myself to delude myself into thinking that I could take on the job?
What you were actually hearing, like looking back, can you hear what you were actually, what your body was actually saying beneath the delusion?
Yeah. Stop. Reset.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, I feel like my body was saying, the world view that you have and the paradigms with which you're approaching the world no longer work for who you are.
Ugh.
And it was everything. It was my friendships. It was the way I was interacting with my husband. It was this career path that I was on. Basically my life was like, either I will fire my life and it will be deliberate and I will have some management ability over it, or my life is going to fire me and it's going to just be a thunderstorm.
Yeah.
And because I didn't listen, my life fired me and it was a thunderstorm. The fertility stuff hit at the same time I left my job, at the same time the two of my closest friends, and I broke.
Wow.
Just completely broke apart. Mm-hmm. So I ended that year just laying on the ground, and luckily had a coach that saw me through the whole thing, who took the veil off and said, well, you know, really what's behind the work that I do is yoga, but not like asana practice, not the physical dimensions of it, mm-hmm. but the whole eight limbs of yoga. And so she took me through a shadow process using the kleshas, and I don't have to get into what that is or anything, but it's like the sources of pain and some of the deeper yogic work that's pretty challenging. And I did it during the dark time of the year and went through some profound existential crises during that time and faced my worst nightmares about myself. And after a few months, came out the other side, realizing that I couldn't listen to myself when my life was trying to change. But now I was on the other side of it and my life had changed. So there wasn't as much to be afraid of. And I could ask myself some new questions.
Asking yourself new questions. Yeah. So in that period where you were led through, you know, having to confront those aspects of yourself that essentially you maybe you had externalized, or the parts of yourself you didn't want to accept as you. If you're willing to share, can you share a couple of what you faced in that time? And yeah, just share that.
Mm-hmm. Like some of the things that I found out were actually me that I didn't think were me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the really fun stuff, right?
Well, I'm gonna tell you one. And it has to do with money.
Oh.
So, in the nonprofit field, you know, both my parents, they've worked in nonprofits my entire life. Like, I don't think I knew that there was a different way to be. And I came out the other side of that realizing I want to make a lot of money. Like, a lot, though.
Cool.
Like, I want to be wealthy. Not just rich, but wealthy. And I had trained myself in the social justice world to think that that wasn't okay. So I didn't even let myself have the feelings, because I thought what I would have to do to get that was going to be participating in the industrial globalized systems that have screwed everything so far. And I couldn't participate in that. But I think what I came out on the other end realizing is we all participate in it all the time. You and I are doing this podcast on a computer that's right. A part of that world. I have a phone. I don't know what, you know, 9-year-old made the clothes that I'm wearing right now, but like, there's just no... there's no way to escape it, because we eat, sleep, and breathe it in a industrialized country. And so I can either acknowledge that and let the complexity of that stand and not erase the path that I'm on because it's complex, or I can try to fit myself into some box based on ideology that is always going to be incomplete anyway. So money was a big one. And I think another one had to do with my fertility journey, honestly. It hit me that I could be completely happy not having kids. And that was a new thought for me.
So you had always wanted kids, apparently, it sounds like.
Yeah, since I was like 4.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It was like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a mom. I had this story about myself that I was only working as a placeholder until I could be a mother.
Wow. I bet, you know, I bet that's not that uncommon.
No. I think it's not that uncommon.
Yeah.
But it was another example of how I didn't think I could be as ambitious as I actually was and be a mom at the same time. So I already had committed to choosing my kids instead of my career. And there was a part of me that was dying on the inside, having already made that choice.
Because you wanted that career too, it sounds like.
I am wildly ambitious. I mean, I said that to my parents, that I was just working as a placeholder until I could have kids. And my mom was like, wow, so national television and like running a multi-million-dollar nonprofit and visiting the White House on a semi-regular basis is a placeholder, you're saying. Cool. That makes total sense to me. And I was like, huh.
Yeah, your shadow side is really funny.
Seriously, it was right in front of me, but I couldn't see it.
Wow. So I'm curious, you know, I think that the money thing, like wanting to make a lot of money, and even like in my community here, and in some of the listeners, maybe they don't even want to make a lot of money. They just want to make a living. That does contrast hugely with that othering of that industrialized system and wanting to be like, it's not okay. I don't want to be part of that industrialized system that's screwed the world. I don't want that to be my life. So I'm not going to make money, because if I do, then I have to participate in that. But I think when we sit in that space, we do deny that we are in that no matter what. So how did you reconcile that? Because that's some really complex stuff right there.
It is. And to me, it's actually the seed of how to do shadow work.
Nice.
The first, one of my principal tenets is a first step being allowing opposites to stand.
Mm-hmm.
And not having to reconcile them too early.
Mm.
Just let them be what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Let things that feel irreconcilable exist in the same space without having to do anything about it for a little bit. And trust that there's more information there, that there's probably more complexity than you're seeing in that moment. And that if you let those things exist for a little while, sometimes the reconciliation can happen by itself. And if it's not reconciliation, there's more data that shows up that gives you an idea of how to do the next step. But I think just this obsession with reconciliation that we have in society is part of what's hurting us, you know? And I think, and me being a mom right now is a perfect example. My son is a black man who is going to live in a society that's going to register him as being dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes being black feels like an irreconcilable thing with being American. Just straight up.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, this is my country. And African Americans and the legacy of blackness in particular is gorgeous. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. But race doesn't exist. So how do I hold blackness with such awe and wonder and know that it also doesn't exist? It's a social construct. And as long as the construct exists, racism will exist. But I don't want to not ever be black. You know, it's things like that. It's like, mm-hmm. you can just keep spinning and going around and around and around. And I just have to let those two things exist at the same time and let them be and not have to reconcile them. Just feel all of the feels as a result of them existing. So that's not quite an answer, I think, or it doesn't feel like
a
satisfaction.
I think it is. Oh, well, you know, that's the thing, is we don't need to reconcile the answer here.
Yeah.
So much there. I think, you know, in this need for people, you know, you say this first step is allowing these opposites to stand, and not having to rush to reconciliation. You know, in your perspective, would that point the arrow at how underlying all of this, our people in our society are super, super averse to feeling uncomfortable? And that's also just being in the discomfort. You said feeling all the feels, like that's such a necessary skill for this. I mean, you say this is one step, but I'm like, wow, this is like a whole bubble of being right here.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple of things there, I think.
Okay.
obviously more than a couple, but a couple come to mind. One thing is the question of why do people rush toward reconciliation so quickly?
Yeah.
And I think what you said about discomfort is definitely a piece of it. And another piece, I think, is on the generous, if I'm being generous with people, not being able to reconcile suffering means that suffering continues. And in the purest part of our hearts, we don't want to see others suffer. So we try to reconcile the things that we see as being causes of suffering. And there's a reason why most religions in the world have a practice around suffering is life. There is no way to have suffering not exist. When suffering doesn't exist, we will all be enlightened and humanity will cease to exist. Is the point of life to try to eradicate suffering? Or is the point of life to sit with the understanding that suffering exists, period? And we can figure out our humanity along the way. And I just think that's real hard for people.
Yeah.
Totally real hard for me.
It's real, real hard because who wants suffering to exist?
Yes.
And if you do, if you're okay with it, then you're a bad person, essentially. Then, exactly. You know.
And there is, I mean, on the other side of that, there is a very real thing where that reasoning that I just said can be used to excuse things like classism, racism, gender inequality, etc. Because, well, right. Suffering's real. You're never going to reconcile it, so there's no way to actually fix racism, right? I can just participate in it because there's no way to reconcile it.
Right.
And that's not true either. Neither of them are true. There are always ways to improve, but there's never a way to be perfect. And so reconciling a lack of perfection with the fact that we can always be better is also very hard for people. And I had another point that I can't remember right now, but pausing there is a good one.
Yeah, well, you know, we were talking about how this allowing opposites to stand and needing to rush to reconciliation all kind of forms this bubble that you know, underlying it is that unwillingness to sit with discomfort. So I don't know if that would spark and you were saying not being able to reconcile suffering is one point. I don't know if the other point might be sparked from that.
Well, I think it's probably the second point I made just around then what do you do?
Yeah.
And how do you be better without being perfect?
Right. So let's get into that, if you're willing. I mean, we're here talking about shadow work, so. Because we want to improve and we're never going to be perfect. So how do we live with things being like not perfect but good enough? Like what is good enough? Does it exist? Is that a construct that we can just eradicate as well? I don't know if we're getting too abstract here, reel me in, because I know I can get real abstract with this stuff, so feel free to just have me concretize it.
No, I actually feel like I can ground it in some real life examples.
Okay, that'd be great.
Yeah. So a big way that I've used all this stuff is with my husband, right?
Cool.
After we did some fertility treatments in late 2016, and I still hadn't gotten pregnant, I had another meltdown early in 2017. And I was in early 2016. We did some fertility treatments late 2015, early 2016, super meltdown. Do I even want to be married to you?
Wow.
What are we anyway? And we went through some counseling of the same kind that I'd gone through in late 2014. And it was in that this question of how to be better without being perfect. I mean, in any marriage, I feel like that is a huge question.
Yeah.
And I asked our coach, you know, what's the point in sitting with all this work? Just period. Like, what's the point? How are things going to improve? And when I did it, what I found was that by sitting with those opposites and not having to have them be reconciled, I was able to notice more in the present moment. And in noticing more in the present moment, I was able to be more connected to whatever was happening in that present moment. And when I was more connected, I was in relationship in a different way. And that relationship became more fulfilling just because I was more connected and more present. And it sounds really simple, but I just found more joy because I wasn't always trying to fit pieces into some predetermined notion that I had about what the world was. And when I could enjoy my husband more because I wasn't trying to fit him into a box and I wasn't trying to fit myself into a box and I wasn't even trying to answer the question, are we going to stay together? I just experienced him again for the first time in a really long time. And I feel like in my work, I see that reflected all the time, that people are so busy trying to fit the world into the boxes that we've outlined for ourselves that we stop seeing what's right in front of us. We stop actually having real complex relationships that don't have a beginning, middle, and end. But it's in the complexity of that relationship and in the presence that we get connected. And connection is the seed to everything. It's where life comes from. So in a way, I would say that's the point when it comes to how to improve and how to be better. And that's what's good enough, is being connected in that moment and allowing that connection to create possibilities that didn't exist before. There are all these new options that exist when there's true connection, because people are more willing to be generous with each other and with themselves.
So you're just saying that we need to give up our need to define everything. And yeah. We need to actually get curious with the unknown of what's right in front of us.
Yes.
Easy task. So in that respect, maybe this is a leading question. Maybe I have an answer I think I know. And I'm going to just admit that before I even ask this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I love this.
But I want to know, like, what's the shift that needs to be made in order to actually do that? I feel like there is a shift. It's a shift of perspective from my point, but I want to hear from you. Like, what would you say is the shift that really needs to be made to come out of that place of needing to define and answer questions to just being present? There's, yeah.
Individually or as a collective, as a society?
Is it different?
That is a great question. I think I don't have a perspective on the collective in this moment. It's going to take a whole lot of selves coming together. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of why I focus now on, it's interesting. I feel like I used to have a bunch of answers to the collective, which was when I was more focused on systemic change work. Mm-hmm. But my work has shifted so much to working with individuals and groups of people, because I could see how much that feels like it's the seed that leads to everything else.
Oh, I have chills.
And so when it comes to the self and what it takes to do that, it's why I focus on shadow work, actually. Because that's what I think it takes to just be present in the moment, is it takes being real. But being real versus being good is real. It sounds real simple, and it is friggin' rocket science. Even for me still. I still have shadow stuff come up every day that is terrifying to me, that stuff lives inside me. And having a systematic process to go through of shadow integration that is gentle. That gentle is not the right word. I'll say generous. It doesn't feel gentle a lot. but it's generous. It's generous work. That feels like what it's going to take for ourselves to all come together. Because when stuff's hidden, it's operating on us all the time. It's in control of us if we can't see it. And it is operating on us. We're not using it as a tool in our toolbox. So to give another example, since we are getting a little abstract again there, my relationships with women, and this feels like it's getting pretty vulnerable, but looking at the titles of some of your podcasts, vulnerability is the name of the day.
Bring it.
My relationships with my friends that are women have been fraught, way more fraught than my relationships with men and boyfriends. And there's a way, I think it's because some of the most challenging relationships that I've had with my female friends have been the friends that are me the most, that reflect these parts of me that I actually don't like, or reflect parts of me that I desperately want. And so it would be some single white female stuff where I would just get too attached in a way that wasn't healthy, or I would be being a mean girl without realizing it, and in my head breaking her down to size so that I wouldn't feel insecure in her presence. And both of those things, either being mean girl or single white female, I wasn't aware that I was doing it when I was doing it most of the time. And then my friends would confront me on it, and I would legitimately not know what they were talking about and think they were being insecure and crazy. And I'm such a strong-willed individual that I can usually make people think they're crazy. If I really put my mind to it, especially if they've confided in me and given me pieces of themselves that they don't usually give to other people. I mean, it was terrible, some of the things that I did, without even meaning to, without realizing I was doing it. And I think that in women-women relationships, that shadow stuff is operating so much. So much of the pieces of ourselves that we don't see are operating. And then when we get called on it, we don't even know that it's there. So we can't fix it. We can't work on it because we can't see it. So that's part of why I've made it with my, I've made it a part of my work, especially with women, to really ground ourselves and how to see more of ourselves at any given moment, especially the pieces of us that scare us.
Thank you for sharing that and getting, you know, it's not always easy to talk about yourself when it comes to the shadow thing. So I'm curious, what was the moment that you were able to see those things that you can now name?
Well, in my relationships with women, honestly, it's when they cut me off.
How did that, how does that feel? I mean, just hearing that.
I mean, it's awful. It's awful. You know, it's like the people that block you on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and like they were your best friends for years, and you can't, they've put up such a firm boundary that it's like you being in their life is kind of dangerous for them. And that just hurts. And I completely and deeply respect the boundary, because the more I get into the shadow work, the more I really come to see too that sometimes we just trigger each other. You know, we come into each other's lives and we don't know why. And sometimes it's to do a very specific piece of work that if it's done in too close of a proximity can be really hurtful to all people. So we do as much work as we can in close proximity. And then there needs to be some distance so that we can go back and do our own work. And even though it hurts, because I love these women, you know, I love the fact that we're doing our work in a way that is, it feels real, you know, being in each other's lives and trying to dumb down the hard shit, because that's what it takes to be in close proximity in each other's lives, is not what I'm interested in. I'm more interested now in being real. And when people protect themselves in my presence, it's real.
Amazing. I mean, this all points to what you're saying with getting out of that space of needing to define and reconcile and getting into the space of being present. That includes being vulnerable. And sometimes when you're vulnerable, you get hurt or you face the shadow. And it's like the edge. It's like the edge of what each of you as individuals and both of you collectively know how to face in the moment. It's like that's that's the soil.
Yes.
So where do you go from there? So with this work where you're like facing these dark shadows about yourself, about how you were projecting onto others and how you were unconsciously from that shadow self acting and reacting in certain ways that caused your friends to turn away from you, how do you turn around and look at yourself then and really welcome that part of you back home? Or what does that look like? Do you welcome that part of you back home? What's there?
I feel like the definition of the process you just laid out is leadership. You know, the example that I used was a very personal one.
Yeah.
But I feel like anyone who's been in a position of leadership knows that the same thing happens professionally over and over again all the time. People will fire their entire staffs as they, as a leader, are going through something and need a change of scenery. Or, you know, and a board of directors will fire a CEO and bring somebody in new. I mean, the changes that tend to happen, I think, in business are also very reflective of what I'm describing with shadow work, where sometimes whole revolutions need to happen inside of systems because something new has been realized and now the old paradigm no longer works. So I think at its core, it's just that phrase, the old paradigm is no longer working.
Yeah.
What's neat? And I do welcome those parts of myself back home once I can see them, because they always existed. They were always inside me. I just couldn't see them before. So now it's just the onus is on me to have a new conception of self based on these pieces of me that are now visible. And it makes my leadership that much better. And it makes my heart that much better. Mm-hmm. And it makes my ability to empathize and be in relationship that much deeper, because now I see you in ways I didn't see you before, because I can see me in ways I couldn't see me before. And it's been pretty dramatic how much better my relationships are now interpersonally, and also how much better of a businesswoman I am and how much better of a leader I am, because I'm not straining so hard to try to fit things into these small little boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me welcome times of breakdown in a way that I didn't used to as well, and be able to support the women and the initiatives that I work with that much better.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, you know, I can only come from my own experience of shadow work here and relate to it when I hear your story, and I see your story reflected not only in my life, but the life of my husband, the life of my community, and the life of other people, that they go through the exact same thing you've just outlined. It's like, hey, this is so, it's almost normal and so not talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is right in front of us when we're willing to turn around and look inside and look at that stuff that we don't want to accept about ourselves, and to bring it. And I'm just going to pause myself before I get on a whole shadow work pedestal here. I don't know what you call it. What are the podium?
Soapbox.
Thank you. The shadow work soapbox. But I really love how your experience of shadow work is really directly woven in with leadership. And to anyone in, you know, we're both here in the United States. Anyone here in the United States can just take one look at the leadership, probably at almost any level from like HOA to presidential level, and see how the shadows are at play in our systems. And here you are. Almost coaxing these shadows to come out. It's like you almost have to do, we have to do this in order to change the paradigm. So I guess I'm just sitting here thinking like, wow, you know, I'm so sold on shadow work. A lot of my listeners are like interested or sold on shadow work, but how do you sell this to the leaders and all those places that aren't necessarily, you know, we're in a very accepting place of shadow work where we're, you and I are talking right now, but like city councils and other organizations, how aware are they of this? And how do they really connect with you about that? It just seems like such a divide, even though it's so necessary.
Well, one fundamental tenet of business that I love is that you don't talk to your clients in language that they don't understand. You know, you talk to your clients in the language that they use. And so this is not a conversation that I would have with someone who doesn't have the shadow work vocabulary. Usually the way people approach me is, hey, I've heard you do equity work. And I'm kind of concerned about the fact that everybody I interact with is white. Can you help me? And I'm like, sure. So we enter from the perspective of diversity, equity, and inclusion work a lot of times. And I usually give them the spiel that I'm not like a historic systemic oppression type diversity consultant. I work with how do we relate to each other and power and trust and integrity and sovereignty and things like that. And if they're interested in working on that level, then we can get down. And it's through that work that shadow work inevitably comes up. But I just don't call it that. I more so go through the process of how to integrate the shadow without calling it that.
Cool.
And then once they're really good at it, then maybe the term shadow work comes up. But I feel like everyone tends to have a point of reference for there's stuff going on in the system that everybody knows is in the system, or maybe everybody doesn't know it's in the system. There's stuff going on in the system that's acting on the system, basically, that you can't see. You don't know why your colleague is treating you like this. You have no idea why your direct reports all seem to have gone crazy at the same time. Your board chair talks to you in a way that is insane, and you know that there's some shit going on that you can't see, but you can't quite put your finger on it. Right. Like, everybody has a point of reference for that. And so I just start from that point of reference and go from there.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense then. You know, you speak to them in a language they understand. And that's funny, you know, it is so universal, and we don't need to call it shadow work to do the shadow work. I love that. You know, that kind of just gave me some freedom right there, because I'm so, you know, you mentioned to me that you get so excited when you hear the word shadow, and I do too, but like, you know, how many people have no clue what that means, but they come to it with their own language of the problems they're having, the struggles they're having, the questions they're having about inclusion and diversity and equity, and you're able to relate on that level. I get, okay, cool.
Well, but you know, what I will also say is that that's becoming less and less of my portfolio, just because now I'm getting more interested in working with people that get it and want to go deeper.
Ooh, okay.
And I think.
Keep going. Yeah.
Projection work. I'll use that as an example.
Okay.
Right. So this thing I said about letting opposites just sit in the beginning, a next step that I work with people on is projection, and how anything that you're attracted to or repulsed by is a part of you that you now have access to. And the first way that you get access to your shadow is through projection. You throw it up on somebody else or a situation, and you notice that you feel a strong like or dislike. And anytime there's a strong like or dislike, it's a clue that your shadow is there. And working with that directly is incredibly confronting work, but it's very, very exciting to me. And it can get as deep as, you know, I'll work with people and have them say out loud the things that just make their skin crawl in their lives right now. Ugh. Who do you not like? Who's pissing you the hell off? Let's talk about that person. Tell me everything about them you don't like. And I'll record it, or I'll write it down, you know, like key phrases. Mm-hmm. And then I'll say to them, now say, instead of them, say the word I in those sentences, me, and say exactly what you just said about them, about yourself. And find it. Dig deep and find it. Find you in this, in them. Where am I in this? And those conversations get so rich and so deep so quickly, and they evoke very strong emotional responses very quickly. But it's like, you know, 6 months worth of work that it can take with someone who doesn't have a point of reference for it can be done in one session. If someone does have a point of reference for it and are ready to go there with someone who's skilled in how to hold someone in that kind of container. And so that's more of the work that I'm interested in doing now, and that I'm starting to do more and more, because I feel like our country and the state that it's in right now, more and more people, but women I'm finding especially, are realizing that the cat's out of the bag. Like, our shadow is playing out on an international stage as Americans. Mm-hmm. We have a shadow president right now, quite frankly. Yeah. It's just someone who is representative of most of the things that Americans have swept under the carpet and not wanted to acknowledge and not wanted to claim. And we needed such a hard lesson in it that we elected it as a president. But the opportunity there is to integrate it And I think that people are now ready. People are done, I think, hiding in the shadows so much. But the terrifying part is that if you engage shadow work and you don't know how to integrate shadow work, then the shadow consumes you and it eats you and you end up worse off than you were before. So people do feel like it's better to just not let it out of the closet than to be eaten by it. That's the fear. And it's a legitimate fear, which is why I take it so seriously.
It is a legitimate fear. And, you know, I'm wondering when you do this projection work and you're taking people deep, you know, what do you find there? Do you find that at the core is a limiting belief, or do you find the core is a trauma, or, you know, are there different things you find there? And how do you, what is that, essentially that magic point of integration? What happens when it integrates versus when the shadow would consume them?
Well, there is a book that I highly recommend that answers that question, and it's called Pigs Eat Wolves, Going into Partnership with Your Dark Side by Charles Bates, for anybody listening. And it uses the metaphor of the three little pigs to talk about the shadow integration journey. And what I love about it is that I feel like most of us know the three little pigs story up until the brick house, right? That's like where it ends, I think, in a lot of people's minds. But the original Three Little Pigs story, there were four steps after the brick house.
Oh.
And that was when the pig, like the wolf not blowing down the brick house, kind of represents when we're strong enough to start the shadow integration journey. But that's the part where it ends in our minds, which is hilarious. after that, you know, the pig meets the wolf in the turnip patch, the apple orchard, goes to the fair, and then rolls down the hill in a butter churn before the wolf comes down the chimney and into the pot and the pig consumes the wolf. And all of those things. And, you know, a lot of cultures have different versions of that story, like the three hens and the bird or something like that. A lot of cultures have a three prey and one big predator story that shows the shadow integration journey, which I think is super awesome. It's like a hero's journey type thing where it's same metaphor and myth. And I think your original question was like, at what point, well, first of all, what's there when I take people down this journey? And it is usually a belief of some kind that is so fundamental to their identity that they didn't realize it was there. And to let go of that belief would be to change their identity in a really fundamental way, which was why it was too scary. And that belief is also protection for being in the world in a particular way. And an example that I'll use for myself, when I did projection work, one of the most impactful projection works that I did was around naivete, that I just can't stand, or at that point, I couldn't stand women who were naive, who I perceived to be naive. Like flighty was a word that I would use, silly, that kind of stuff. But then when I did the projection work and I called myself flighty and I called myself silly and I called myself naive, the image that came up was a little girl. That my little girl was basically in a cage. I was completely disrespecting her. And thus I was disrespecting my imagination and my creativity. And it went back to this incident, a few incidences in my childhood where I felt like being creative in the world was dangerous because people are not going to hold my creativity generously because the world is a harsh place. So it's much easier to just be harsh and meet the world in that harshness and put my creativity down than it is to be vulnerable in my creativity and feel the harshness of the world. And I was sobbing. I mean, I was in a ball on the floor, really. So I don't necessarily think it has to be trauma, but it can feel pretty traumatic.
I mean, I think that counts as trauma.
Yeah.
Like yeah. You splintered off a part of yourself that went into the shadow and you had to go back and find your little girl.
I did. I did. And I think in the second part of your question around like, when do you get consumed by the wolf versus actually integrate the wolf?
Yeah.
And it's stopping before we see the thing we've now just identified as truly being a part of us. That's when we can get consumed by the wolf. And another example would be a mentor of mine who I register as being egotistical and all about themselves and just me. Mm-hmm. It is just awful. And I am, you know, very vulnerably still in a shadow journey with this person. I can recognize that that's a part of me, but I still look at this person and I'm disgusted sometimes. And so to realize that that's a piece of shadow work and to take on what I view as this persona would be to take on all of the worst parts, the egotism, the selfishness, the willingness to burn bridges willy-nilly, indiscriminately. Mm. Like if I go into shadow work without discernment, then I'll take on the most extreme versions of those characteristics instead of discerning which pieces are actually useful to integrate and which pieces aren't. So I feel like that word discernment is how to stay on the good side of shadow work, is to know that the way something appears in the beginning might be an extreme version. And as we go through the journey, we can actually parcel out what pieces are useful and what pieces are exaggerated and come out in the end more whole.
Mm-hmm. Right. I guess one example I can think of is when someone, you know, with you're saying, and maybe this isn't true for this particular person, but just as a potential example, like with the being willing to burn bridges, like, you know, you don't have to end a relationship through crisis and burn a bridge. You can actually just have stronger boundaries and depart on a more, you know, on a less traumatic level, you know, like you don't have to burn a trail of destruction in your wake. You can learn how to say it's over before it gets to that point.
Yep.
Which is a big lesson. I know I had to learn that. I'm still sometimes learning that. And I know a lot of people learn that one. Uh-huh. Yeah. So, you know, just from my own shadow work experience and working with beliefs, I know for me, I have like a sort of toolbox of different practices and things I can use to dig down, follow the threads and find the beliefs. And then when I do find the beliefs, to kind of unlock the story that's keeping them in place. You know, is that just sort of, is there something specific you do when you get to that belief, or is it just sort of a natural part of the overall process that you use that helps that belief to become unstuck and transform?
Well, usually when I get to the belief, then there's experimentation that happens.
Okay.
And there's an exercise called the worst nightmare. That's one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. I haven't done it, but it sounds fun.
It's so much fun. I do the worst nightmare a lot now. And a lot of it is just like, okay, now we've identified that belief. You know, within the example that I gave about my own creativity, now I've identified that I think it's dangerous to be creative, that that's been a belief that I've had. If it's not dangerous to be creative in the world, what's there? Can I experiment with being creative in the world in a way that felt dangerous before? Mm-hmm. And what are some safe emergencies that I can create around that? Mm-hmm. So it could be as simple as like wearing, you know, an outfit or a hairstyle that feels totally challenging to my quote image that I've created and seeing how people react to it. Putting myself basically in situations of danger around my creativity, mm-hmm. and seeing how it feels, seeing my worst nightmare come up of people thinking that I'm silly and just experiencing that in my body and feeling how that feels and feeling what I have access to as a result.
Mm. An intrepid explorer.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So something that we talked about before we got on the phone that has been really big for you lately is recently becoming a mother and how this motherhood has added a whole new dimension to shadow work for you. Do you want to share a little bit about what that is, what you mean?
Yeah. Real practically, what I would say is that sleep deprivation and spending time with a human being that doesn't have an ego quite yet, is just purely himself and does whatever he needs to do whenever he needs to do it, is enlightening in so many ways. I think it shows me how controlled I am all the time. All the time. Something as simple as when I'm changing his diaper, you know, he will fart in my face. Just like my face will be hovering very close to his butt and he'll cut a nasty one. I mean, just like, I don't understand how he can fart like this when he's just breastfed. And he won't think anything about it. He won't laugh. He won't notice he's done anything out of the ordinary. He needed to fart. So he farted.
Such freedom.
I know. And that level of freedom is so inspiring to me. It's just incredibly inspiring. So it shows me the level of shadow and the level of hiddenness of parts of me. It's like extreme shadow all the time. Because I see these places where I've become more controlled, or I manage my own experience in ways that are, I just manage my experience instead of just experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the simplest way I can think of to say it. I don't actually feel my highs and I don't feel my lows because I'm always trying to not ever be out of control.
Mm. Wow. I'm like, what's the worst nightmare that would happen if you were out of control?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'll tell you, actually, one of I did this business incubation fellowship once, and they had shadow work as a part of the leadership development work. We had a shadow party where we had to do all this work during the day to find a part of our shadow, and then we had to give that part a name, go get an outfit that this person would wear, and we had a shadow party that night where we all showed up as our shadows.
Wow.
And my shadow, her name is Sheila, and she was an alcoholic. I don't drink. She's a nymphomaniac. I, you know, my husband is like one of the three people I've slept with. And she was also fairly nihilistic. And I'm like Miss Optimism, you know? And to find that these opposites were actually very much a part of who I was intense. But then to be her for an entire night was profound. Oh, it was too easy, Natalie. It was too easy.
Oh, wow. How? Like, what was so easy about it?
Because it was me. It was me that I've denied. And her language came easily. Like, it was terrifying. I had to stop at some point because I was just like, this is just too
out of control.
Yeah, too out of control. I could be destructive, real destructive.
Wow, I love that idea of the shadow party, and you met Sheila the shadow. Mm-hmm. And it was so easy. So, like, what did you walk away from that party with, you know, from having met and embodied and found how easy it was to be Sheila?
I think what I walked away from that with is that Sheila is not who I am. And the version of Nikki that's the opposite of Sheila is not who I am. What's real is somewhere in between.
Hmm.
And that is the essence to me of shadow work done completely.
That's
is the understanding, exactly, that when there's parts of ourselves that we've hidden, we embody the opposite of that. Not necessarily what's real, but the opposite of whatever it is that we're trying to deny.
Hmm.
When the truth lies somewhere in between. And when we can let two extremes just sit, the middle tends to show up organically. And so I left that party not being a nymphomaniac, alcoholic, nihilist chick, but someone who was a little more willing to see what's real, what's right in front of me, and not always jump to it's going to be okay. Someone who was able to acknowledge that there's, you know, some family alcohol issues that are the reason why I don't drink, and that being might be okay to have a glass of wine every once in a while instead of being super extreme with it. And someone who acknowledges that there's trauma in my body,
mm.
which is the reason why I've shied away from certain types of sexual situations, even with my husband. And that integrating my body is going to give me access to so much more when it comes to my power. So all of that didn't happen overnight. Like, I didn't wake up the next day like, yeah, body integration. It's been the work of, you know, over a year.
Mm-hmm. That's some deep stuff that you realize just from embodying Sheila, who I want to say Shayla.
Shayla. Mm-hmm.
Wow. I want to talk to you forever, but I know we're going to have to wrap up not too long from now. Do you want to add anything else about this motherhood shadow journey for now? And, you know, I think obviously we're just going to have another conversation at some point because there's so much.
No, if I start unpacking that more, we're going to go down a rabbit hole.
Yeah. Well, judge, you know, just sitting with how you're feeling and how your baby is feeling at the moment, do you have time and energy to talk a little bit about racism?
I do.
Okay. I honestly, I'm just going to admit, I have no idea where to enter this question because it's such a huge and complex, tangled thing. I guess actually now that I've said that, I have an idea where to enter, but, you know, like one thing that I think would be really interesting to speak to, just because I speak to this spiritual community of mostly white women, is like, you know, do you have experience with dismantling racism in this spiritual community? Or if there's something else you want to speak to, feel free to trash that and go another direction.
I will speak to what I register as my experience with that.
Okay.
But it's not direct in terms of I've worked with spiritual communities around dismantling racism. I've never done that before.
Ooh, maybe it's time for us to hire you to come into these groups, you know?
Absolutely. I would be more than willing to do that, especially considering where I feel like my experience is. Because there's a... If I had to put it simply, I would say that there is an easy spirituality that is pieces of entire complete concepts within ancient traditions. And an example I would use, right, is yoga. Mm-hmm. Is a great asana practice is the thing most people register as just yoga. It's the physical postures. But the yama and the niyama are the two limbs of yoga that come before asana. And then there's five limbs after that that get into breath work and pranayama and candle gazing. And the last one is that mindful concentration. It's the last step. And you got to go through seven other ones to get there. And along the way, there's really uncomfortable stuff in there.
Yeah.
You know? Like, one of my yoga retreats, we did the upper wash, which is where you chug a liter of hot salt water first thing in the morning and throw it up.
Wow.
You know, it's like, those are, discomfort is inherent in spirituality. But somehow, in Western society, we've managed to simplify spiritual practices enough to where they just feel good and they help us, quote, get more in touch with ourselves, or like, the feel-good stuff.
Or be more productive, quote, quote.
Or exactly. So I think my experience with what you're saying has just been to bring the pieces that aren't represented to these ancient practices when I see it. Or to remind people that there's more to it than what they're practicing. And create an invitation to practice more of the complete versions of them. And find who is practicing more of the complete versions of them. And uncannily, it tends to be people of color.
Because y'all know. You know, well, what it's like.
I feel like it's people that are suffering that understand that the point is not to eradicate suffering. Because mm-hmm. That's just not going to happen. You know, the black mama that's lost her child doesn't want to forget her child.
Right.
That's the only way to ever have that not hurt, is to forget that she had a child. And no mother would ever choose that. There's always going to be pain and suffering with that memory, but there is a way to integrate it so that we are more. As a result of having lived that experience, we can still be whole wholeness is the goal, not a lack of suffering. Peace is the goal, not vapid happiness. And so practicing whole traditions leads to that.
I guess a good question for people to take away from this then. Actually, I'm going to let you say, what question would you want people to walk away with this in order for them to go deeper in their own pursuit of wholeness?
I think a question that comes up for me is, what is the original context within which the tradition that you practice came about? Mm-hmm. Just that question.
Love it.
Because mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, going to sweat lodges or practicing witchcraft or yoga, you know, any of these. Witchcraft is actually a very interesting one, because the first like ancestral pilgrimage that I did was to Ireland.
Cool.
And that land brought me to my fucking knees. You know, like I had something of a breakdown there because the vibration was just so powerful. And it was painful to feel what had happened to that people, mm-hmm. you know, and having to hide behind Catholicism and how ridiculously powerful the women were and have been in that society. And there's a whole rabbit hole to go down there. But I feel like the context within which paganism and things like that came up was a war between pagans and everyone else, in a way. These huge religions that were just starting to come up that started to consume parts of paganism because pagans were everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I feel like usually in the beginning of these practices, there were seeds of conflict, and knowing what the seeds were and being able to have a relationship with those seeds, it gives a deeper resonance. It's a place to start.
Love it. I'm curious, are you part Irish, or did you just feel called to go check out Ireland?
I am part Irish.
Okay, cool. So you went on, did you go as an ancestral?
I did.
Cool. Wow. Well, that'll have to be continued, y'all, because we have so much more to talk about.
I felt like we would.
I know. Just beginning. I am so grateful that we came across each other and that you were willing to come on the show and share, because it's been amazing. I want to know, will you share with our listeners where they can find you and what you offer?
Yes. My website is nikkisylvestri.com, and the things that will be most applicable, I think, to this audience are the individual and group programs around leadership development, shadow integration, and in general, just getting into deeper touch with many of the things we've talked about in this conversation. But if you go to my website, you'll kind of see the descriptions there.
Mm-hmm. Cool. You're on Instagram too, right?
I sure am.
You want to share that?
Nikki_Sylvestri is the Instagram. And I'm not actually on Twitter that much, so just do the Instagram.
Cool. And it's Nikki, N-I-K-K-I, y'all.
N-I-K-K-I, yes.
And we'll link to all that in the show notes as well. Very cool. This has been... I love the shadow. I am so excited. I don't know where else we'll get to go, but I know it'll be fun. And I'm just so grateful you came on the show today to talk about shadow work. And I hope that people listening who have places where there's conflict, where that could be transformed into working relationships, reach out to you, because I think that's, you know, really what we need is who's who's going to duplicate you into like the million Nikki so we could put you in every group? I mean, I still stand by that. I'm like, where? But you know, I guess that's to
well,
be
that's
determined.
why I do. You know, anyone who takes advantage of that individual and group work that I do gets to replicate all of this stuff, and then they get to help others replicate it. And
right.
through all that, we become a beautiful virus that infects the world with integration.
Yes. 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 Call upon those microbial spirit beings to guide us.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Nikki, for taking the time out of your day as a new mama and recently going back to work. So I know that's a lot of stuff. So I really appreciate it. And I hope you have an awesome evening.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you all so much for listening. I hope you found this episode inspiring and supportive and helpful. I am obviously totally in love with the work Nikki's doing, and I'm obsessed. And I really hope some of you will be inspired to maybe step up your game if you're in a place and in a position where you can bring shadow work to your workplace, but through a different name. If you can go get some training and bring this healing process to the people, do it. We need it everywhere. This isn't just for us healers, empaths, and intuitives. This is for the world. So, yeah, love that. And if you want to support the show, the very best thing you can do is share with a friend. Share it with a friend on Instagram, on Twitter, Facebook, on email, in real life, over a cup of tea. Whatever method works best for you. I'm on Instagram, so when you do share and tag me, if you share publicly, I try to respond. Sometimes I don't see them all, so I apologize. But when I do, I respond, and I'm so grateful. So thank you all so much, and I'll see you again next week. Also, make sure to check out our April energy report. It should be out April 1st. Okay, thanks. Bye.